goes, and welcome again to the Ask Beauty Show. And I can hardly believe that this is the last Ask Beauty Show of 2020. And what a year 2020 has been. But today is a really special show for me because I am dedicating this show to my mom, Edith Sayre of Winnipeg, Canada, who died 15 years ago today. And my mom was a really interesting woman. She was a teacher, she was strict, she was tough. And yet she was able also with my father to provide me with enormous opportunities of all kinds, educational opportunities, sports opportunities. And I think at times I really didn't understand her criticisms and her strictness. But I'll tell you a really cute story. One year I was visiting her in Winnipeg, and I had just actually started my national radio and television media career. My book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, had just come out. And I remember sitting on the sofa with my mom, and she was absolutely amazed that her daughter, who had to go to summer school every single summer for math, this is when I was in high school, had actually been able to achieve some national notoriety. And we used to actually laugh about it, because the fact was is that I really didn't find myself professionally and educationally until my graduate and postgraduate work, which I did at McGill University in Montreal. So if my mom were alive today, I think she would be sitting on the sofa in Winnipeg with a big smile on her face and still kind of wondering how her little girl, Beatty, who had so much trouble, and of course I was so disinterested in the social studies and math and science curriculum that was, of course, a part of my early education, that I was now a radio talk show host, that I had a full-time, of course, psychotherapy and sex therapy practice. So, Mom, this show is really for you. And if I never told you, and this is something that I want all of us to really take in, that we want to make sure when people are still alive and in our world, that we do not forget, that we do not forget to say the important things to them, because sometimes we really only get one shot at it. And I think that one of the things for me is that I don't believe that I actually did express enough appreciation and gratitude to my mom. So even though she's not here today to listen to the Ask Beauty Show, I'm hoping in some way that she knew that I was very grateful and I was very appreciative of the childhood that she and my father had been able to give me. Well, of course, it has been quite a year when you think of what has gone on. What has gone on since the pandemic, since March? I mean, I have an entire private practice that is on Zoom, and I was one of these people who really spent very, very little time on the computer, very little time on social media. And now my entire professional life, and actually my entire social life, although I still like to talk to people on the phone, is on Zoom. So there's been a huge change for all of us. And of course, the impact of the virus on jobs, on our health, on our social relationships, our mental health, and so many Americans and people around the world have real concerns about paying their rent, about buying food, basic things. that before the pandemic that we really didn't typically have to think about all that much or worry about. And I know that when people first started working from home, a lot of us felt, oh, isn't this great? We don't need to get dressed in the morning. But now 52% of the people who are working remotely are feeling more anxious working from home. We missed those connections. We missed those socializations. And of course, Americans have doubled down on some of their worst habits to cope with emotional stress related to the virus. You know, I was looking at recent statistics, hoping that the statistics were going to go down, but alcohol sales have actually jumped up, with spirits up to 75%, wine sales up 66%, beer sales up 42%, and also cannabis reached an all-time high in March 2020, even though medical experts have warned us that marijuana and vaping and tobacco may indeed increase the risk of the virus. And now that the weather is getting colder, people are exercising less and eating more. So we really need to be very, very mindful of all of the things that we actually can do, not just think about, to improve the quality of our day-to-day life, emotionally, mentally, psychologically, and of course, physically. And again, to accept the things, and this is so important that we all really take this in, to accept the things that we cannot change. There's things that no matter what we do and how we think about things that we are not going to be able to change. But the courage to change the things that we can. And of course, the wisdom to really know the difference. And sometimes you need to sit with an expert or a good family friend and look at your life very honestly and openly, and ask yourself a number of very, very important questions. Because when you think about it, every year, most of us, we schedule appointments with our doctors and our dentists to make sure that our bodies and teeth are strong and healthy, right? But doesn't our mental health merit the same kind of attention? And although an annual psychological checkup may not be feasible for everyone in the current healthcare system, individuals should still feel empowered to explore our mental well-being or lack of mental well-being. And a self-exam is something that is important to do. So I am going to ask you some very important questions that I want you to seriously, seriously think about. And the heading, of course, is how are you doing? How are we doing? So the first area that I want you to consider is your mood. I mean, look, we all have ups and downs in terms of our mood, but most days, how are you feeling? Are you feeling, when you get up in the morning, joyful and happy? Or are you finding more and more that you are feeling less energetic, that you're not sleeping well, that you're not eating, or you perhaps are eating too much? And that you're finding that you're feeling mostly depressed. So that is something, again, that you have to think about and be honest with yourself. And of course, if you're finding that your mood is sinking most days, the question then becomes, what are you going to do about it? And as I've said to you for the last number of years, is that we don't need to navigate our challenging world on our own. And if you're finding that depression or anxiety is really getting in the way of your life and your relationship, I hope I've convinced you. In fact, today, is the 326th Ask Beatty show that I have done here on the Progressive Radio Network. I hope that I have done a good enough job in convincing you that it is okay, that it is not a weakness, that it is a strength to reach out and ask for help when you're finding that you are really struggling. Okay. The second area that I want you to consider is your relationships. And this is something that we oftentimes tend to make a lot of excuses about, or we tend to ignore. So here is my question to you. If you look at the relationships in your life, whether it's at work, whether it's at home, with friends, with family, how do you think these relationships are impacting you? Again, I think it's really important to be honest about the relationships that are working, that you are happy with, and the relationships that are potentially toxic or even toxic that you have maybe up to this point have been afraid, and you have not been really able to figure out what to do with disappointing relationships, dysfunctional relationships, toxic relationships that in the end can really have a major, major negative impact on us physically, emotionally, and of course, psychologically. And I'm not suggesting that if you are in relationships of various kinds that are not working, that you just outright walk away from difficulties, walk away from conflict. But what I am suggesting is that after you have tried and tried and tried to acknowledge and address and resolve issues with your family members or your colleagues or your partners, and that you are continuing to go around in circles, and that nothing is changing other than that you are feeling worse and worse and worse every day, every time that you are surrounding yourself with these people, you need to make a decision about whether or not you want to be in relationships that are destructive, self-sabotaging, and that hurts you at the very, very core of your mind, your body, and your soul. And we're going to be talking a lot about relationships today. And what about your professional and your financial stability? So many people have lost their jobs and have lost their businesses, and this is the time where thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people have really needed to stop and reflect and recharge and figure out a new direction that they are going to have to go in. And again, I want to continue to remind you that, you know, life these days, it has become so, so, so complicated that it is important. It is important for all of us to feel and to give ourselves permission and to be able to reach out and get a second opinion and get a third opinion when you're finding that you are feeling stymied, whether or not it's about your work situation. Abuse of various different kinds are definitely up. They are really up a lot. So again, I'm asking you to look at your alcohol or drug use, and is it under control, or are you finding, like a number of people who I have been treating over the last number of months, that they're taking that extra Valium, or they're taking that extra pill, or that extra sleeping pill? And before you know it, you can find yourself in a very, very serious downward spiral. Again, it is about being honest with yourself. And what about your physical health? Are you taking sufficient care about your physical health? We know the importance of exercise, even though it's it's getting cold, we can always bundle up and take a walk around the block. And we also know what studies are telling us about weight training and exercises for our cardiovascular system. And these are things that are really within our control. And I think it's so easy for all of us to make excuses about why we're eating too much or we're not eating enough or why we're not exercising. And yet, you know, what I try and get my patients to think about every single session, in fact, that is the homework that I give everybody at the end of every session, is to think about and to contemplate as you navigate your days, are the things that you are doing, whether or not there are your interactions with other people, your eating, your drug use, are you engaging in life? Are you behaving in ways that are in your best interest? And I know that I was discussing this with a recent new patient of mine, and as soon as I suggested that she look at her behavior in terms of whether it was in fact good for her and in her best interest, it was something that she did not want to hear. And as we're continuing to explore why somebody feels that it is not the right thing to do to look inward and ask themselves whether or not the behaviors, the relationships that they're engaging in are actually good for them. And upon further discussion with this woman, she started to cite the Bible. And believe me, I am no Bible expert, neither the Old Testament or the New Testament. And for her, she felt that looking at life in terms of, is this something that is good for me, made her believe that she was someone that was selfish and was not caring enough about her fellow human being. And all I can tell you is that we can do good to our fellow man, and at the same time, we can be good to ourselves, and that the two are definitely, definitely not mutually exclusive at all. So again, in creating the kind of life that we want, we can't change our history, that's for sure. It is about moving forward. We want to look at all of the different aspects of our life that are involved in creating a good and stable life. And of course, that includes our finances. And are we being financially responsible? And of course, with everything that's gone on with the pandemic, people have lost their health insurance and are really having to figure out what the next step is actually going to be. They're looking at their careers, they're looking at their businesses. So there are a lot of explorations that are going on right now. And again, I can't stress the importance of not feeling that you need to do this on your own. And if you're looking at things like, you know, free time and family time, after all, time is really important. And, you know, I talk a lot about the passing of time, and you want to make sure that we are all using our time in the best possible ways. And of course, again, you know, I referred to, you know, health and making sure that we're eating well and that we are living well and that we are getting enough sleep and we are getting enough exercise. And again, the focus on our relationships and making sure that we are in functional, constructive relationships. And if we are not, despite the fact that we may have tried everything possible on our ends to make a relationship work, you know, as I was saying to a patient earlier today, all we can do is make changes in ourselves. We have no ability at all to force anybody to change. So, you know, the ball really, it really stops with us. And all we can do is be the best that we can possibly be. And if we are in relationships with people who make us crazy, who hurt us, who abuse us in a variety of different ways, we can spend all of our time thinking about what we can do better, how we can be better to make this person love us, to change this person. But in the final analysis, all we can do is make changes within ourselves, which hopefully then help us to have greater clarity about what is and what is not working in our lives. And I want to spend the majority of the remainder of the show really talking about love and talking about relationships. And we know about the 75-year Harvard study, because I've cited it on a number of occasions, that have told us over and over and over again that love is really all that matters. But then the real question then becomes is, what do we need to do if we are interested in finding and maintaining and sustaining a healthy love relationship? You know, there was a piece in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, and the headline was, "You seemed really nice, but that was before we met." And this was a piece about online dating, and it talked about how sparks can fly on virtual dates, but often don't catch fire in real life experiences. Because we start imagining what it's going to be like when we finally meet, and we start feeding and nurturing this fantasy. And, you know, the reality is that longings and wishing and fantasies, all of those things are fine to a degree. But in order to be able to really find and maintain and sustain a healthy relationship, it really comes down to the three things that I have discovered over all of these years that we really need to do. So number one, okay, if you are ever, and I really believe this, if you are ever going to find a healthy relationship, the first thing is that each of us needs to be in a really good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And we have to be willing. We really have to be honest, and we really have to be willing to deal with our unfinished business from our past, from our family of origin, whether or not we are talking about abuse of any kind, so that we are then going to be able to have clarity about ourselves and about our relationships, our past relationships, our current relationships. And unless we do this, we are never, ever quite able to live in the moment. But in fact, we typically live our lives with one foot in the past and one foot in the present. So when you think about finding someone, I think that that is not typically something that most people would put on their to-do list, but rather they are going to reach outwards and they are going to hope that they're going to find someone who is going to love them and make life okay for them, despite the fact that they may not be feeling very good about themselves. And as I used to tell my daughter all the time, and you've heard me say this many, many times, is that I believe that the relationship really does need to be the icing on the cake, but that we need to be the cake. We need to be solid. We need to be strong. We need to have our self-esteem in a really good place. Otherwise, it is very, very easy to fall into relationships that are not in our best interest and at worst are toxic and extremely dangerous and destructive. There was a really interesting piece in the New York Times. It was called "Should We All Take the Slow Road to Love?" And this was a piece by Tara Parker Pope, and she says that millennials are going on fewer dates, having less sex, and marrying later. Do they know something about love that the rest of us don't? So is the secret to lasting love to take it slow, as in really, really slow? And I think that my answer to that is yes. And I wouldn't have answered like that 25 or 30 years ago. But studies are showing that millennials are dating less, having less sex, and marrying much later than any generation before them. And a younger generation appears to be following in their footsteps. And Dr. Fisher is a very, very famous world anthropologist. She happens to take an interesting view and suggests that we could all learn a thing or two from millennials about the benefits of slow love. But again, if we are feeling okay about ourselves, we are not going to feel the need to rush things before we really had an opportunity to find out who our partner really is and who our partner is not. So it seems as if everyone is swept up in a very myopic understanding of sex, love, and romance, said Dr. Fisher. And she's a senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute. And she says that she would like people to understand that while millennials are not marrying yet and are not having as much sex as in her generations, the reasons for this are good. The millennial cohort is roughly defined as those who were born in the 1980s to the early 2000s. And although there is some debate about the boundaries, millennials, due in part to their digital savvy, already are credited with significant changes in how we live, work, and interact. But actually, what is particularly striking is how quickly the cohort has rewritten the rules for courtship, sex, and marriage. For example, in 2018, the median age of first marriage was approaching 30. Now that's interesting, 29.8 for men and 27.8 for women. And that's more than a five-year delay in marriage compared to 1980, when the median age was 24.7 for men and 22 for women. So that's a really big difference. In 1980, 22 for women was the average median age, and in 2018, 27.8. And a 2017 study in the Archives of Sexual Behavior found that many younger millennials in their early 20s aren't having sex and are more than twice as likely to be sexually inactive than in the previous generation. Well, another study found that American couples ages 25 to 34 spend an average of 6.5 years together before marrying, compared with an average of 5 years for all other age groups. And Dr. Fisher, who is the author of Anatomy of Love, A Natural History of Mating and Marriage and Why We Stray, she's devoted her career to actually studying love and relationships. And most recently, she's collected data on more than 30,000 people related to current courtship and marriage trends. And Dr. Fisher believes that instead of criticizing and judging millennials, perhaps we should be paying more attention, because it's possible, she said, that today's singles are carving a more successful path to lasting love than previous generations. You know, it's interesting. And she notes that people who date for 3 years or more before marrying are 39% less likely to divorce than people who rush into marriage. And this is a real extended period of the pre-commitment stage. And with slow love, maybe by the time people are actually ready to get married, that they know who they've got and they think they can keep who they have got. Because if you ask millennials, according to Dr. Fisher, they will tell you that there is nothing casual about their approach to sex, dating, and romance, which is a real change from the 60s, because hooking up with someone doesn't mean that millennials now don't value marriage. If anything, the studies are finding that they value marriage more because they are putting a lot more forward thinking into that decision. And Dr. Fisher says her research suggests that today's singles seek to learn as much as possible about a potential partner before they spend time, energy, and money on courtship. So as a result, the path to romance has changed significantly. Whereas in the old days, a first date used to represent the getting to know you phase of a courtship, now going on an official date with someone comes much later in the relationship. And for some singles, sex has become the getting to know you phase of courtship. And this is interesting. In a study conducted for Match.com, Dr. Fisher found that among a representative sample, 34% of singles had sex with somebody before the first date. She calls it the sex interview, which is interesting. And she talks about when a client of hers first met her fiance, the questions were, what's your credit score? And in the long run, if we're talking about marriage, I don't know whether that would be the first question. It would hardly be the first question that I would have asked a prospective boyfriend or partner. But in the long run, if we're talking about marriage, buying a place together, having joint bank accounts, putting cars in each other's names, those are crucial decisions that will be linked permanently for both people. So what this seems to be suggesting is that the millennials are really putting a lot more serious thought into the ingredients that actually go into a successful relationship, which is really number two of what I found. So that number one, each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically. But number two, we all need to put ourselves on a learning curve. And that learning curve has to do with learning the actual ingredients that go into a long-term successful relationship. And when you think about it, where do we learn this? Now, if we were lucky, and of course, there's no guarantee, even if you grew up in a home where your parents had a successful relationship, there's no guarantee that you are going to repeat that early lesson. But the fact is that most people these days are really left to their own devices to try to figure out what are indeed the ingredients that need to go into a successful relationship. And, you know, what I have found, and it's kind of ironic, we have more books, and relationship television shows and relationship experts and therapists. And yet look at the reality of what is going on in the world of marriage and divorce. For first marriages, 48% of first marriages end in divorce. Second marriages, 67% of couples marrying for the second time end up in the divorce courts. And for third marriages, 74% of couples end up divorcing. So you kind of wonder, it's not about the number of partners or the numbers of relationships that you have, but it is what you have been willing to learn about healthy relationships. I mean, if you're looking at domestic violence statistics, every single day, four women die in the United States as a result of domestic violence. Every single year, 1.2 million women are forcibly raped by their current or former male partner. 30% of college students are saying that they have been abused in some fashion by somebody that they are dating. So again, we are definitely, definitely missing the boat. And yet, you know, when I talk about relationships, I am so happy to be able to share really good news. I mean, I have found through my research, through my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, and through being a psychotherapist and sex therapist, a practicing psychotherapist and sex therapist now for over 35 years, I have really figured out the things that we need to do to find and maintain healthy relationships. And yet, what I have found is that the majority of people have not been willing to really put the work in, and therefore find themselves going from relationship to relationship and basically repeating a very, very similar, unfortunate, sad dynamic. So the question really is, I mean, is are you willing, if you are someone who is interested in finding lasting love, and I'm not talking about necessarily getting married, but having a healthy relationship, are you really willing to do some personal work so that you are going to be positioned to be able to really make good decisions? Because if you look at our culture, you know, you can look at the television shows like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and The Housewives of New York and Beverly Hills, or tune in to any Lifetime movie occasionally. You know, I'll look at some Lifetime movies just to kind of see what is going on in terms of the world of relationships. And what do we see? Well, we see that dysfunctional relationships, they are glamorized. They are really glamorized in the media. We can't get enough of the celebrity talk shows that talk endlessly about all of these actors' relationships. And on the surface, these television shows can really be viewed as innocent entertainment. However, I feel that their messages about relationships and marriage really do make a mockery of what it takes to have a healthy, long-lasting relationship. And, you know, as I mentioned before, how many people were fortunate enough to have positive role models for parents to teach them about loving relationships? And certainly in the school systems, for the most part, we learn virtually nothing about relationships. There may be some courses on sex education, but that's usually about it. So when you think about it, if we haven't been taught about what ingredients go into a healthy relationship, and if we do end up relying on misleading portrayals of love in movies and television and popular music, how can we then expect people to be able to make healthy choices about their relationships? Well, you know the answer. The reality is that we can't, and we don't. Now, many, many people that believe that the best way to build stronger families and marriages is to attack the barriers keeping people from achieving their full potential. So issues like poverty, racism, sexism, unemployment, and addictions are often cited as primary reasons for the breakdown of relationships. And although these are certainly contributing factors to marital and family strife, removing these barriers alone will not solve the problem. I mean, again, for me, I go on and on and on about the importance of relationship education. But you may be surprised to hear what I'm about to tell you, because in the past 35 years, I have treated some of the wealthiest, best educated, and most successful people in the United States. And I can definitively say, and I say this every single day, and I used to be surprised, but I'm not surprised any longer, that the relationship problems of my rich and famous clientele are no different from the people who I've treated from the inner city areas of Montreal, of Providence, and Manhattan. And again, the difference is that the people who are rich, the people who are famous, yes, they're able to take a break. They're able to go shopping. They're able to take some trips. But both groups know virtually nothing about what ingredients actually go into a healthy relationship, nor have they learned and developed the emotional communication and problem-solving skills that are necessary to maintain and sustain a relationship. So if you think going to Tiffany's or going to a fancy store and buying an expensive item is going to change the way you are functioning in your day-to-day relationships with your partner, you are absolutely sorely, sorely, sorely mistaken. So again, we've got to fix ourselves. We need to learn the actual ingredients to go into a healthy relationship. And finally, the solution, my 10-step formula that I promise you will change the way that you look at relationships forever, and it may even save your life. And as you know, I did research with 450 people in the Boston, Connecticut areas a number of years ago, which culminated in my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And what this is, and I only wish that I had had this book and this assessment format when I was much younger and starting my dating life. But what this book does, what my formula does, it teaches you exactly how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before you make a decision to commit to any potentially serious relationship. It's kind of like having me in your purse or your wallet doing an ongoing diagnostic assessment. And no, this assessment cannot be done in a week, and it cannot be done in a month. What my research found is that it actually takes close to a year to find out who somebody is and who that somebody is not using the formula. So what we need to do, we need to have the knowledge, and we need to be willing. We really need to be willing to keep our eyes wide open and look at the reality of our relationship. In fact, I'll tell you about a recent patient of mine. She met a man at a fundraiser in Los Angeles 5 years ago. And this is a woman who is a household name, who's very wealthy, and her partner, who she, well, she's now married to, is also somebody who comes from enormous wealth and has enormous notoriety in this country. So the two were seated together at a fundraiser, and there were apparently immediate sparks and immediate commonalities, or so they thought. And he lived in Paris and she lived in LA. So the communication was primarily by mail, by Zoom, and on the phone. So they had this long distance relationship. They didn't actually see each other much, if at all, for the first year. And she had all kinds of fantasies, and of course, I'm sure he did as well, about where this relationship was going to go. So finally, after a year, they both ended up in the same city in the United States, and they made a decision that they were going to get married. And she was elated, and apparently, you know, he had found this prize woman who everybody in the world knew all about, and they got married. Now, about 2 hours before the actual ceremony, and I want to also add that he did not want any of her friends or any of her family to attend this private ceremony, which of course should have been a huge, huge red flag. I mean, this was something that was a really important day, ostensibly for both of them. And he announced that none of her friends, none of her family were going to be invited to the wedding. And this woman is a really strong, forceful figure in the world. And somehow she decided that she was going to acquiesce. She did not want to make any waves, and so she agreed. So about 2 hours before the ceremony, and this is maybe very difficult for you to believe, and it really broke my heart when she told me this, her soon-to-be husband's secretary arrived with a document. And what do you think this document was? Well, it was a prenuptial agreement 2 hours before the ceremony. Apparently, they had talked about it in vague terms, but he wanted to make sure before he said, I do, that there was this document that she was going to sign. She told me she was in tears. She did not even bother to read the document. She signed the document. She signed the prenup. And that was how the ceremony began. Just before the minister was going to marry them, here is a woman being presented with a prenup. Again, another huge, huge, huge red flag. But she signed the document. So what's happened in the last 10 years of their marriage? Well, he's had a number of affairs. He continually is sexting strange women. She recently found a woman's makeup bag in his bedroom. And the most destructive thing about this marriage is that he is a major, major manipulator and gaslighter. And he has almost, and I'm really glad she contacted me several months ago and is in therapy with me, he has been trying to convince her that she is crazy, that she is imagining all kinds of things. And of course, this is classic
dynamics of what goes on in domestic violence relationships. I mean, she is having a very, very difficult time acknowledging to herself that she is in a domestic violent relationship. He has yet to hit her physically, but her emotional and mental and psychological scars are so deep. And he's also convinced her, and it's going to be interesting to see how this is all going to play out. I mean, we've been in touch with an attorney, and, you know, in my professional view, I mean, this is a relationship that she, A, should never have entered into, and of course, B, should be getting out of as soon as possible. She is not yet at that place. So, again, you know, we can, on certain levels, we can know ingredients that go or that should go into a successful relationship. And yet it is so easy for many, many people to find themselves in relationships that are toxic, that are so destructive. But if our own inner core is not solid. And that's where I come back to number one, which is that each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally, psychologically, and psychiatrically so that we are able, that we have clarity about ourselves and about the people in our lives who we are dealing with and interacting with on a day-to-day basis. So this doesn't have to do with education, and this absolutely does not have to do with socioeconomic status at all. It has to do with our being very, very mindful of the people who we let into our lives. So my therapy with this woman is continuing, and she was telling me a couple of days ago that her husband would like to have an appointment with me on Zoom, of course, because he feels that I'm missing the boat and that he needs to tell me how really crazy his wife is. So this is going to be a very, very interesting case as we move forward. I have real clarity, believe me, about what is and what is not going on in this particular relationship, in this particular marriage. And yet how easy it is for people who are smart and educated and rich and who on the surface look as if they have everything in the world and if they have their act really, really together, how crazy make it can be when we are engaged and when we engage with toxic people. It's so easy to get confused. And I don't know how many of you saw the movie with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant, Undoing. But this particular marriage situation that I am dealing with right now reminds me very, very much of Hugh Grant, who was clearly a psychopath, who clearly, by his own mother's admission, had absolutely no empathy, and how easy it can be to be manipulated and to have somebody gaslight us at every single venture of our life if we are not in a good place ourselves. So this is going to be, I think, a very interesting situation. And I am very hopeful that this woman, who is brilliant in all kinds of ways, is finally going to realize that there is absolutely nothing that she could do. You know, she was saying, as if I'm prettier, if I'm thinner, if I'm smarter, if I'm nicer, that somehow I am going to get this monster. And these are my words. To love me. So it really goes back to, we cannot change anyone at all. The only capability we have is being able to change ourselves and in our relationships, develop some real clarity about what is going on and what is not going on, and who this person is who we think we're in love with and who this person is not. And sometimes for millions of women and men too, things become very, very unclear and blurry, which is why as I begin the show every single week, we need to give ourselves permission to actually and reach out and ask for help. And, you know, what I'm going to do at the beginning of next year, which is just next week, 2021, I'm actually going to take you through the assessment process that I developed, my 10-step formula based on the book, to teach you exactly what I have learned and what I have taught thousands of people around the world in terms of how to really and truly assess who your partner is and is not after, but before committing to any serious relationship. So I'm looking at the clock again, and it is amazing how an hour goes so quickly during these shows. So, my friends, I want to leave you with my two weekly messages, which is I'm hoping that I have convinced you that you are not being selfish and you are not being shallow. If you learn to do whatever it is you need to do, what is in your best interest so that you can really love yourself. And of course, secondarily, we all need to do a much, much better job. And I'm hopeful for the future when it comes to loving our fellow man and loving each other. And I end 2020 Ask Beatty Show with my favorite song, and that is "What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love." So have a good new year, everybody. 2021 is just a few days upon us, and let's hope that we're going to have a much richer and better and more loving 2021 as we move forward. So goodbye, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week in 2021. Bye-bye.